Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
DJ Zoe in the house, apparently, is what we just learned. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. The Friday edition of the Rob Brown Show is on the radio. Good day, sir. I said good day. How's it going? How's everybody? Y'all good? Y'all good? Y'all good? Stayed up nice and late last night watching the last of our three, or I should say the first of our three remaining college football games. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish end up getting the dub. Holy crap, what a time to make the biggest mistake of your career, Drew Allert. That was...
Way to go, Jimmy Franklin. God. It's all your fault, Jimmy Franklin.
I can't. As much as it's fun...
Has anyone blamed him yet?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I just noticed the Batista look. Are you Batista today?
No. The Madre brought me this hat back from Ireland. This is she went to Ireland last year for Christmas.
Yeah, but with the beard, that hat, those glasses,
I look good. I agree. Thank you for complimenting me earlier.
Trying to be Batista. Batista now, not Batista when, I mean, because.
Dude, yeah. I would be any Batista.
No.
Just any version of Batista is better than my fat ass.
The older Batista has lost a lot of muscle mass. So, I mean.
Be nice to have it to lose it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would. Yeah. But like, go to the gym? Nah. Eh, and maybe a little HGH, but like not the point.
Maybe just a little bit. Today is the day when most people quit the gym anyway.
It is. Today is Happy Quitters Day, everybody. Happy Quitters Day.
Yeah, a bunch of losers. Here's the best way to do it. Don't start. And then you don't have to worry about it.
As the great Homer Simpson once pointed out that, if you don't set goals, you can't fail at your goals. If you don't set goals, you will never not reach your goals. It's philosophy, people. It's just, it's a solid way to attack life. If you never say, I'm going to do X, then you never have to say, I tried to do X and came up short. You will never say, I failed, if you don't try. That's the philosophy. If you never say, then nobody can make fun of you after you don't win. So
yeah, like that guy.
We've got a show lined up today, ladies and gentlemen. We have got one half of our national championship game set. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish are on their way to the ship, baby. They are waiting on the winner of this evening's contest between the Ohio State University Buckeyes and the Longhorns of the University of Texas.
Looking forward to...
Go to bed early.
Snow falling out to my left.
How magical is going to that be? For you?
No. See, it's going to be picturesque.
Yeah.
Snow falling to my left.
Yeah.
A fire in the fireplace, just a little to the right.
Okay.
And then a little right of that, the Ohio State Buckeyes beating Texas.
I like that.
That would definitely be a beautiful Hallmark moment.
Not the Hallmark
TV show, but Hallmark like it used to be, just the pictures.
Hallmark like it used to be. Back when
cards.
It was good.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, oh, okay. You know,
before the movie channel.
Yeah.
Although, good for all those actors who get to play the same roles over and over
again.
There's
one lady
movies.
That apparently has been in 27 Hallmark movies so far. 27 Hallmark movies. That's all she does. She just, they wrap one, she like walks to the next lot over, bang, starts working on her next one.
And I am sure, without a doubt, that she plays a different character in every single one of those 27 movies.
Yeah, typecasting, not a problem on the Hallmark channel.
Nope.
You basically, there's like four wheels, and you spin them, and it's like, okay, does she come from the city and move to a farm, or does she go from a farm to the city? Number two, is the guy like a Christmas tree farm owner, a bakery owner, or is he like a big city magnate who forgot what true love feels like? Or like the CEO who has to learn what loving other people is. And then they have to find out, is it like a redemption story or is it just a classic love story? They spin those wheels and then they put together another Hallmark
Although,
movie.
Although, if I had to choose between the two, I'd pick the Hallmark channel over Lifetime any day. So, I mean.
Let's see. I know my brain is not going to calm the hell down until Lacey Chabert? Chabert? Chabert?
It's probably Chabert. You should, I mean, you're basically wearing a French hat. You should.
It's Irish.
Uh-huh.
It's not French.
If you turn it around, what's it look like?
It does not look like a beret. That's a totally different style of hat.
If you turn it around, it definitely would look like a beret.
Lacey Chabert has starred in nearly 30 Hallmark films. However, she also starred in Mean Girl. Oh, I know who she is. Okay.
Cameron Candace Burr.
Yeah,
whatever.
She's been in a handful, but she left in 2022 to join Great American Media.
Okay.
I don't know what that is. I got a guess, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, your guess is probably right.
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah, it is.
Probably is. All right, we got a lot we got to get to on the radio program today. Glad you're all here. Let's have some fun on a Friday. Got to get down on Friday. One of my favorite things I'm looking forward to getting to later on in the show. Did you see the very awkward interaction on College game day between the, and I know it's been a couple of weeks now, but there's a reason I bring it up now, the awkward game day interaction before the Notre Dame, speak of the devil, Indiana game between Nick Saban and comedian Shane Gillis? Did that make your social media circle at all?
If I recall, I think I saw it live. So, yeah.
Yeah, or did you watch it live? Effectively, Shane Gillis lobbed a bomb in the spirit of a joke at Nick Saban. Nick didn't like it too much. And Shane Gillis yesterday went on the first that I've seen, responded to that interaction, and it's freaking hilarious. So now we have some background.
I doubt it, because from what I've seen, he's not very funny. So
Shane Gillis,
yeah,
he is and Nate Bargatze are my two favorite comedians going right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do it, you don't have to find the funniest bit he's ever done and prove to me he's funny.
To me, I am putting at the top of the list Shane Gillis's story about taking a tour of Mount Vernon during COVID, which is hilarious. I will say this, Shane Gillis has a style of comedy of which a large portion of it is very, I'll say, off color, and much of it would be considered not politically correct. And we all know Lonzo's a big politically correct guy over here. Very woke, Lonzo is.
Mm-hmm.
So
could his routine be said in the office and it not be a surprise?
Not at all. Not at all, but neither could George Carlin's or Dave Chappelle's.
I was saying our office.
No, not at all.
No, I mean, you and me? Me and you and Chris are in there.
And
you and Chris start having a conversation. Could you have the kind of conversation that he does in his comedy act?
No, but here's what I'll say. I think that Shane Gillis falls in a group. Here we go, another stand-up comedy discussion. I love these.
Andrew Dice Clay-esque.
No, he's not. He's not like angry. He dabbles in. So, for instance,
I'm saying Andrew Dice Clay wasn't angry. He was just kind
what?
Of.
What? No, are you kidding me?
He was not angry. Are
I don't think you know who Andrew Dice Clay is.
Are you thinking
is?
Of Sam Kennison? Now, also, that was angry. Andrew Dice Clay, not angry on stage. He was kind of like a New York Flatbush, kind of wearing his leather stuff. Not angry. Delivery never angry. I don't think you know what angry
could
is.
Could not disagree with you more. No, I think you wrong. equate loud with angry. I'm a quiet angry.
He's not angry.
Okay.
Andrew Dice Clay was never angry.
Whatever. The point here is when it comes to Shane Gillis, Shane Gillis is the proof that, like, you better put your money where your mouth is. So for instance, Shane Gillis has, decide whether it's appropriate or not, Shane Gillis has multiple jokes about his interaction with kids who have Down syndrome. But Shane Gillis is very involved in philanthropy for people with Down syndrome. He coaches basketball teams for children with Down syndrome. He has family members who have Down syndrome. He's very active in that community. But then he takes those experiences and he crafts them into jokes. And at that point, you can go, okay, if this guy's going to laugh about it, we're okay. I'll give you the perfect example to me. The perfect example to me is this. And this is one I approach with some level of trepidation, but I also think it's part of the conversation. I'll give you the example. If I'm standing around in the mall and some guy is making jokes about cancer, that guy's probably going to catch some heat, right? There's somebody going to walk up to them and go like, hey, you insensitive jackass. But for me, I lost my father to cancer. I have multiple family members right now that are fighting cancer, and it's not going great. To me, dealing with the harshness of life, comedy's how I do that. Humor is how I do that. I have made plenty of cancer jokes in my lifetime. Does that mean I'm support cancer? No. I despise it. It took my father when I was 25 years of age. It's sickening to me. I do philanthropy for cancer all the time. I donate to cancer research whenever there's any sort of event in the area to raise money for cancer awareness, research, prevention, etc. I participate in whatever capacity I can. But yes, I make some pretty dark jokes around the office that if somebody just walked up to me and said it, I'd probably wail on them. But I'll make it because it has impacted me personally and directly, and that's how I deal with that. That's kind of what Shane Gillis is, somebody who is directly impacted by this. And he goes off. And I will also acknowledge that. Shane Beamer has a very, not Shane Beamer. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I haven't hung out with him that much. He's a friend of the show. Shane Gillis has a very frat boy approach to comedy, right? It's very frat house humor. And that's not for everybody. But I would also make the point that who's the most highly paid podcaster in the game right now? Pat McAfee. Is Pat McAfee's pod any more than the boys hanging out at the frat house talking sports? No, not at all. Not at all. But it's the most listened to, engaged with, and highest paid podcast in America. I think we've, and this is fun for me as a sports guy, I think we've kind of hit this point where a lot of us go, and I think you and I are beneficiaries of this, although to a less degree because we are on radio and can't go full tilt in that direction. I think you and I have benefited from the fact that a lot of people have circled around to, you know what? I don't have to be buttoned up, serious, you know, locked out all the time. It's okay to crack a dirty joke every now and then. It's okay to have a little fun and be goofy and go off the beaten path as long as I'm being myself. And I think Shane Gillis is kind of at the spear of that when it comes to stand-up comedy. I think he's one of the most unique guys out there. And it's not saying you have to go that direction. Again, you know who the highest grossing stand-up comedian of 2024 was? Nate Bargatze, a guy who does not curse at all, does nothing but clean either one line or story-driven comedy. And I love Nate Bargatze. That dude kills me. He was also on College Game Day. A lot less, I don't know, I didn't want to say controversial, because I don't think Shane Gillis is controversial. It may not be your cup of tea, and that's okay. Because it is, again, it's very juvenile, toned-down, frat-style humor. But I also think a lot of us have come around to like whatever you like. Have fun. Anyway, the point of all of that was that Shane Gillis and Nick Saban had a very awkward interaction on College Game Day. And Gillis sat down yesterday on a podcast and told his side of the story from behind the scenes. And I think it's freaking hilarious. Almost as funny as him calling Nick Saban Alabama Jones because he had a big Indiana Jones hat on. I thought it was knockout funny. So we'll hear about that later on.
Oh, that's what he meant. Okay.
Yeah, because he had an Indiana Jones hat on, so he thought
about
Alabama Jones.
A good portion of the world had no idea what that meant.
You don't think that they got an Indiana Jones hat out of Nick Saban's Indiana hat?
No, because it's not even the same kind of fedora.
It's aesthetically the same shape as the hat.
No, not really.
Did it just not click for you and now you're like, nobody got it? I thought it was hilarious. I caught it in the moment
and
thought it was hilarious.
Did it just click for you and you thought everybody got it?
I got my guy Kane in here making the joke on the chat. I don't know. I thought it was an obvious joke.
Didn't get it till you explained it.
Oh. Well. I don't know. I thought it was drop dead funny. I think, but again, I also think that Shane Gillis is an objectively hilarious person too, or that's subjectively hilarious person.
So is he like dirty, like trying to think of like Eddie Murphy back in the day, or is he?
I mean, he's obviously vulgar. He drops a lot of curse words into his comedy. Don't bother me. Don't care. It's a lot of. I didn't want to say like a lot. It's frat house comedy. Like there's some sexually charged jokes. There's some, there's a lot of racial humor that he throws in there. But he also does a lot of work with, you know, black comedians on tour, and they all kind of have a good time with it. Like it's very frat house humor. But I think he's beyond hilarious. But it's just me. I think he's hilarious. And I think this interaction with Nick Saban was, for some reason to me, one of the funniest things I've ever seen happen. I will say this. Do we agree on this? Do we agree on College Game Day was a different animal and better for it this year? With the addition of McAfee, with... And they've always had like comedians on.
I was gonna say, McAfee was there last year too.
He was, but like this year, this year it broke out to me. Like this year, it feels like McAfee kind of realized, like, okay, I am that dude now. Like I am that guy. I am the centerpiece. They moved him to the middle of the desk this year, so everybody could bounce off of him. I think College Game Day this year, up to and including last night. I did not watch all of it last night. Lady and I did a little date night before the game started, but I feel like College Game Day this year was the best it's been in a very long time. Like, I feel like it was great. I think the last couple of years, even to some degree last year, McAfee's first year on the desk, but I think he was kind of like finding who he was in that desk. I think the couple of years leading up to last year, and to some degree last year even a little bit, I felt like they were trying to like button down and be a real professional show. And then they add the pure unbridled chaos that is Pat McAfee to the middle of the desk. And this year, College Game Day became something that my wife would wake up and put on TV. She doesn't care about College Game Day. She cares about the Gamecock game and nothing else, but she would wake up to put that on.
I'd be curious about how many people turned away because of it.
I mean, I'm sure there was a few.
You're talking about the people that you believe that got brought in. How many people left, and did it kind of equal out, and is it basically about the same?
I'd be interested to see what the ratings look like this year. I have not seen them yet, but here's what I will say.
I spent more time watching Big Noon Saturday, but there's an obvious reason.
Yeah, but you're a Big Ten guy.
No, I'm not. They played Ohio State games like almost single week.
You're an Ohio State guy, and Ohio State's in the Big Ten. So you would focus in on the channel that covers the Big Ten.
Are whatever college team you root for, are you that conference guy?
No.
Okay.
But I'm going to say you're going to go watch TV where the TV channel focuses on your team.
That was my point.
And that's it. Yeah. We agree. I don't know who we're fighting for. I agree. You're watching Fox.
I'm not fighting. You are.
You're watching Fox because Ohio State's primary focus is brought to you by Fox. I think that.
You won't watch Big Noon Saturday because Urban.
Because Urban sucks. Yeah. And I don't like it.
I know that's why.
I will also say 2 years ago, I watched a lot more Big Noon Kickoff and Big Ten. Then they put McAfee on the desk, and all of a sudden, Kirk and Reese and the boys felt a lot less. But I don't like button down TV. I don't like button down sports stuff. That's why I'm a big McAfee guy, and I don't really watch the rest of the.
I mean, you don't like buttoned up.
Buttoned up, yes, correct.
Okay, I'm just.
I don't like buttoned up sports. Okay. I don't like. All right, now let's take a look at the Ohio State game this weekend. Ohio State averaging 17.4. Can we have fun? Can we enjoy it? I think that to me is why Game Day had that resurgence this year, because now it's fun. When the boys stopped that game, and this one I think was from last year, but when the boys brought Game Day to a screeching halt because a stealth bomber flew over the desk, and they were all like, stealth bomber! And they like, I was like, yeah, me too. That's me too.
It also scared them.
I mean, they all turned into children being.
By the way, stealth bombers.
They're awesome.
They're really cool. They are.
They're great. They used to fly them every now and then. One would come by Eglin and the world would stop to watch it. That's what I'm saying. Me too. When the let a naysayer know last year was one of the funniest things that's ever happened on television. I'm still laughing at that. Every time I see it, I still laugh at it. Game Day has had a resurgence because of Pat McAfee that I'm full subscribed to. All right, we'll talk a lot of college football this morning on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So Drew Aller throws a critical interception with about a minute left to play in that game. Notre Dame able to bleed the clock down to inside 10 seconds. Kick what was effectively a walk-off field goal. Penn State did have the opportunity to run one more play, and while trying to run the old lateral Ruski, just wing the ball about 5 yards out of bounds. Oops, my bad. I'll start with this. We're not putting that one on James Franklin, are we? Are we putting that on James Franklin? Or was that two good teams slugging it out and Drew Aller made a mistake?
It was a great game and the quarterback made a mistake, but James Franklin will get the blame for it.
Let me.
Because wins and losses are not a quarterback stat.
They are not.
And since they aren't, that means the blame goes on the coach, so it's all James Franklin's fault.
Once again, wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. It does not mean a quarterback can't do something to lose the game.
Well, that's that stat. That interception stat is what cost him the game.
Is it? So, Riley Leonard had two. So
that particular one at that particular time.
I mean, Notre Dame damn near lost the game too.
Well,
and Riley Leonard had two picks.
So because of your reasoning, it has to be James Franklin's fault.
It does not, although it could be. It could be, and that's what I'm asking.
You can't put it on an individual player, especially if it's a quarterback, so it has to be James Franklin's fault.
Once again, that is incorrect. You can absolutely put a loss on an individual player.
I guess we all confused.
No, it's not that confusing. So the question is it? Are we pinning this on small game James? Are we pinning this on James Franklin? There is a part of me that says yes. There a small part of me that says yes. And a small part of the reason that I say yes is because we have a tendency to dial in on the interception, which was an awful interception from Drew Aller. It was an awful interception. You don't make that throw as a quarterback. You don't, when you have pressure in your face, try to reverse and throw back across the field. It's a bad pick. But I would also point out, if we are going to have that discussion, I would also point out that Penn State took a lead into the half. Penn State allowed Notre Dame to outscore them in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. That pick is not a game-changing moment if Penn State isn't outscored 7-0 in the third quarter. And it's not a game-changing pick if they just take one of the two tutties off the board in the fourth quarter. And what I will say is this. I feel like in the second half, Penn State got afraid of Riley Leonard and they backed off. Everything, to me, everything that Penn State did against SMU to blow them out, everything they did against Boise to blow them out, and everything that they did in the first half that had them a 7-point lead going into the half, everything they did in that half, they stopped. And that's where the blame comes in on James Franklin. And it may have been a decision from the defensive coordinator. It may have been a decision offensively by Andy Kotelnecki, the offensive coordinator. I don't know, but I do know that if it's any coaching decision, it's going to ultimately fall on James Franklin. That's how the coaching pyramid works. So for me, I do think to some degree I am hanging this on James Franklin. And I'm saying that because what Penn State did in the first game against SMU, in the second game against Boise State, and in the first half against Notre Dame, to me, they stopped doing in the second half against Notre Dame. What they did against Boise State was put the ears back and go, if y'all beat us, it's going to be because dudes outside of Kevin Jennings make plays. If y'all beat us, it's going to be because somebody else steps up around him. In game number two, they said, we're taking Ashton Janti away from you, Boise State. We believe he is your team. And we're going to take him away from you. And if you're going to beat us, your quarterback's going to have to make great plays. Your wide receivers are going to have to make great plays. You're going to have to do special things away from Ashton Janti. If he's getting 100 yards, it's going to take him 30 carries to get there. And they did that, and they never backed off, and Boise State never figured it out. And then we get to the game last night, and it just felt to me like watching this game break down. And by the way, Penn State was still moving the ball in the second half. That touchdown drive when they were down 17-10, when Penn State came back, or when Notre Dame came back, took the lead, that drive that Kotelnecki put together to get Penn State the touchdown to tie it up at 17, that was one of the most impressive drives I've seen all season. Like, it was phenomenal. But when I go back and I'm watching the defense in the second half of this game, including the touchdown drive that put Notre Dame up in this game, when I was watching that third quarter drive, I'm like, why are we suddenly backing off here? Why are we suddenly dropping guys back? Notre Dame did the opposite. Notre Dame started bringing more pressure on Drew Aller. Now, Drew Aller knocked down some passes. That like we're talking about, that drive that made it 17-17, that opened up and went through the early portion of the fourth quarter. Drew Aller was standing in front of the pressure, and a lot of that's got to do with Penn State's offensive line, who played well. But I was watching the drive that Riley Leonard had that put the Irish up 17-10. And all of a sudden, Penn State was bringing four, sometimes five. And the five they were bringing was not five keyed in on Riley Leonard. It was just, it kind of felt very standardized, like a very standardized defense, which is not, in my opinion, what Penn State had been doing. That's not what Penn State had been doing. And so while I'm watching this play out, and while I'm watching this team and the way that they were running their defense, it felt to me as if ultimately they changed the defensive philosophy. And what did Riley Leonard start doing? Exactly what I said he would do if you didn't get after him. 3-yard run here, 3-yard run there. Just picking up little chunks at a time. Nothing blowing you off the stat sheet. Nothing that's going to kill you. He ended up with 35 rushing yards on 18 carries. He averaged 2 yards a carry and a rushing touchdown. But isn't that exactly what I said yesterday? That if Penn State changed its defensive philosophy, if Penn State stopped attacking Riley Leonard the way they attacked Kevin Jennings, the way they attacked Ashton Janty, if they stopped attacking Riley Leonard and they pulled back, even if they brought five, if that five was not bring five but key it on Riley Leonard, right? Have it set up to where your blitz, delayed or otherwise, wherever it's coming from, it delays until you see where Riley Leonard wants to run the football, wants to take the football. If he's going to stay in the middle, rush it up the gut. If you see him roll right, if you see him roll left, if you see slide protection from the offensive line, the blitz comes there. Wherever it goes, it needs to be on Riley Leonard and it needs to be at Riley Leonard. Not, we're going to blitz the B gap, right? That's how a defense is ordinarily designed. We're going to blitz the B gap here. Safety blitz, hit the C gap. Get off the outside, get the 9 blitz off the outside, whatever. To me, that needed to be whoever the blitzer is, I need you to pick up number 13. I need eyes on him. If he rolls right, you blitz right. If he rolls left, you blitz left. If he stays in the pocket, you blitz the center of the pocket. Whatever it's going to be, key it on Leonard. And it felt to me like in the second half, defensively, Penn State pulled off of that a little bit. It felt like they kind of regressed into a basic defense. And I understand. You're a bit afraid because Riley Leonard, not a great passing quarterback. He was 15 of 23. I'm not going to sit here and say that Riley Leonard won that game with his arms and his legs. He had 35 rushing yards. He was 15 of 23. Granted, 223 yards of offense, but like a couple of chunks of that. He had what? A 50-some-odd yard pass to Greathouse. He had like 230-yard passes. So there's effectively over 100 yards of offense on 3 passes, right? He really had more, like, statistically speaking, if it wasn't for a couple of, I'd say, one botched coverage, one really good catch from Greathouse. Riley Leonard had an okay day. But I felt like Penn State defensively pulled off of what they had done to attack Kevin Jennings, pulled off of what they did to attack Ashton Janty, pulled off of what they were doing to attack Riley Leonard, and it allowed Notre Dame to get kind of comfortable in what they were doing. They ran for 116 yards. Riley Leonard was 35 of those once the Penn State defense backed off. Take those off the board, you're looking at an 80-yard rushing day for Notre Dame. You stopped Jeremiah Love, which was a big objective for the Nittany Lions. But when it came down to crunch time, I feel like Penn State's defense started to back off and play a little bit scared, a little hesitant. That's not what got you here. That's not what won you games to get you here in the regular season or in the playoffs. Why are we changing our entire philosophy once we got to that point? That's why I kind of still put it on James Franklin a little bit. All right, we'll talk more about this game. We'll preview Ohio State, Texas coming up later in the show. We'll get NFL wild card. Sorry. Super. My bad, Raj. Super wild card weekend projections coming up. It's all on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show, the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the great one, Alonzo, with you. here on an Upstate Friday. Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Keeping an eye on this weather system that we are preparing for, I guess. Keeping an eye on this weather system that may or may not impact us. Here's what I will tell you. We learned yesterday afternoon that many events around the area are being canceled, postponed, whatever. The Greenville Swamp Rabbits home games tonight and tomorrow are both being postponed and moved till later in the season. They will still play, as of right now, the Sunday afternoon game, but the Friday night game and the Saturday night game have been moved. I've already had one person ask so far this morning. The Chris Jansen concert that was scheduled after the show Saturday is going to be postponed. They are going to play that after the game on February 23rd, which is military weekend. So February 23rd, that concert. But the games tonight and tomorrow will both be rescheduled. That game will be made up at a later date, as will tonight's game. And the two events, Stick It to Cancer Night and the concert tonight, will both be moved to later dates as well. We are keeping an eye on the county school systems and what they have decided to do over the next couple of days. And we'll bring you updates and news as it filters in to the station. I do know that right now there is an update on the Greenville County School System that Greenville County Schools this morning are e-learning today. Schools and office buildings are closed. All activities, including athletic events and field trips, are canceled for today and tomorrow. The district's inclement conditions evaluation, or ICE. That's good work.
Well done.
That's good work. The district's ICE, inclement conditions evaluation team, evaluated the forecast, and the decision was made on the predictions and timing for snow and or ice accumulation, which may result in unsafe road conditions, down power lines, and loss of electrical services, according to the district. The statement goes on to say that, quote, because we are an approved e-learning district, this day will not have to be made up, and instruction will be provided through Google Classroom. Students will complete e-learning assignments later if they are unable to participate due to power outages, lack of internet service, or other barriers. Once operations resume, school personnel will begin rescheduling events as appropriate. They do ask you to keep an eye on local media, the district website, and the district's social media for the latest information on school closings or delays. But Greenville County Schools are going e-learning today, and all events, field trips, athletic competition, et cetera, scheduled for today and tomorrow are currently canceled and postponed. So we'll update you on all of that as we get more information upcoming. All right. So if I ask you, first off, how much did you said you woke up and finished that game today. What, if I asked you one or two things, would you say jumped off the page the most at you from last night?
First of all, I watched into the third quarter last night, and then I watched the rest of it this morning.
Okay.
Penn State came to play. They absolutely did. They were more physical than Notre Dame at first, and it looked like that they were going to dominate this game. I think it was, 10-0? For a while, and then they started backing off. And Notre Dame, I don't know if it was a matter of nerves or just a matter, I mean, this is just a couple running teams, basically, just hammering it to each other. And yeah, I know I said that. And then the one big mistake is the thing that cost them the game. I mean, throwing the interception right there at the end. Or it was at least heading to overtime. And he had a better shot, but yeah, throwing that interception was, which happens a lot, cost you a game. Two evenly matched teams. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought Penn State was a better team, and you picked Penn State. I picked it. Denton Day picked it. A lot of people picked Penn State to win, but Notre Dame comes out in the end, and really it comes down to a mistake. And when evenly matched teams, even though they didn't win, Notre Dame had more turnovers still. A costly turnover when it happened is what cost them the game.
Yeah, I think that it's...
Physicality from Penn State, though, I thought it was unexpected. I didn't see them playing like that when they came out. They just couldn't maintain it.
I think there were a couple of things that jumped off the page at me about this, and I think everything you hit on was correct. I think, obviously, The Drew Aller interception with a minute left to play was, to me, like, obviously it's a big problem. Obviously it is the problem. But I would also say that I think it is important to point out that Penn State at that point had, I don't want to say given the game away, but I think Penn State at that point had opened the... Let's rephrase that. So I think Penn State could have slammed the door on Notre Dame in the third quarter, and they did not. I think they could have slammed the door on Notre Dame. I think they could have made it, I don't want to say impossible, but I think Penn State, with the run game that they had going, and the run game was effective for Penn State in this one. Penn State ran for 204 yards in this game, and only 17 of those came from Drew Aller. 84 from Singleton. Catron Allen had 82. You had two 80-yard rushers. Singleton found the end zone three times. There's a couple of things. Oh, by the way, Zoe, let's also talk about the drop touchdown pass by Singleton in the first half. I mean, he runs a little screen out from the backfield. Aller, granted it was not, I don't even know who was on color last night because I didn't watch the game. I started watching the game at kickoff. But they said, oh, you know, if it's a...
Vanilla on play-by-play.
I honestly don't know.
He was on Monday Night Football for a while. Oh, man, why am I forgetting his name? Sean something, I think.
Got me. I don't know. I'm going to keep it a buck. I turned that game on it.
It was that dude and the Alabama quarterback, I think.
McElroy?
I think so.
Whoever it was. When Aller hit the screen pass out to Singleton that he dropped, that's a touchdown. That's a touchdown 100 out of 100 times. Aller throws it over to Singleton over in the flats. Singleton, it's behind him. It's at his hip. But you got to catch that football, right? Like, they were blaming Aller. In fact, I genuinely started getting ticked off because they're like, oh, you know, if that's a more NFL quality throw, if that's a more NFL accurate throw. And I'm like, guys, like, no, it's not a perfect throw, but Singleton's got to catch it. And I know what it was. They didn't want to bust up on Nick Singleton. And I understand that. Singleton's got to catch that football. And this is part of the reason that I said, like, I hang it on James Franklin, but not like a big albatross around the neck.
It was Sean McDonough.
McDonough, yeah.
And Greg McElroy.
Okay. They were both going off on, like, well, you know, Aller's got to make that better pass, and that's inaccurate, and it's behind. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not saying it was, like, a great throw. It was a bad throw. But Nick Singleton's got to catch that football. And this is kind of part of the reason that I am going to hang it a little bit on James Franklin because I thought the philosophy of the game changed. But I'm going to hang it on James Franklin more like I'm not hanging on him like a Flava Flav clock. I'm hanging it on him like a little conservative diamond pendant, right? You know what I mean? Like not a big chain, like a big swing and do your chain hang low kind of chain. I'm talking like a little like accent piece hanging it on James Franklin because James Franklin and Kotonecki ran a touchdown play there and it just got dropped. They settled for a field goal that should have been a touchdown for Penn State. Bango, there's your ball game. Drew Aller on the pitch.
Here's the thing, you know, a closely coached team, a closely played team, a game rather. Sometimes it just comes down to a little bit of luck.
Who makes the play?
Yeah, and that's really what that was last night.
I wouldn't disagree.
I don't know that either team outcoached each other. I don't know that either team really outplayed each other because it's even. I mean, it was what, 24-24 right there with just a couple minutes left. That's a pretty even game.
I think there are times when two teams are well coached and it really does come down to whose players make plays. And I think Penn State left a lot of plays out there. The Singleton pass or the reception should have been a touchdown. It was. Drop football. Notre Dame's got to settle, or Penn State's got to settle for 3 points instead of seven. That's your ball game right there. I think the Aller interception. I mean, he makes a mistake that if a freshman quarterback made that mistake, he'd get his ass chewed for it. I mean, it's just a freshman mistake. You can't make that mistake. That's a bad mistake. There were aspects of this game for Penn State that I can't put on James Franklin. There's aspects of this game where I go, players got to make plays. The coach can do everything right, pull all the right strings, push all the right buttons, call all the right plays. But if the players don't execute, it's on the players. But I will also say, setting up the players to be in a position to make plays that win the game, there's a lot more to it than that. Like, we're all going to, and rightfully so, we're going to hang on the Singleton drop screen. We're going to hang on the Drew Aller pick. We're going to hang on the couple of drops Penn State had down the football field. And those are all obviously massively impactful. But like I said, I also think that there were spots that Penn State, had they just kept doing what got them here, it wouldn't have been a tight game where players had to be all clenched up like that. I go back again to the third quarter of this game, and it felt to me like Penn State's offense, up 10-3, started getting a little conservative. It felt to me like they kind of pulled off the throttle a little bit. It felt to me like Penn State's defense kind of backed off a little bit. It felt to me like in the first half, they were attacking Riley Leonard. We're going to get back there, and we're going to cause chaos. And hey, if he beats us, he beats us, right? That's been the philosophy of the Penn State defense. They were bringing guys at Kevin Jennings in the SMU game. They were bringing guys at Ashton Janti in the Boise State game. They were going, we are going to take your queen off the board. And if you beat us with the rooks and the bishops, so be it. But we're taking your queen off the board. We will throw everything we have to get your queen off the board, and you better know how to pull all the right strings with your bishops and your rooks and your knights. That's a chess reference. I suck at chess. I wish I was good at chess. Chess is a game you have to be a smart forward thinker to play. I'm not. I live in the moment. I'm bad at chess.
I'm going to have to bring a chessboard in and find out how bad you are.
Suck. I will tell you. You don't have to find out. I'm telling you no.
I could be worse.
Booty cheeks. If you're worse than me at chess, you're real bad at chess. You're embarrassed. Don't play chess if you're worse than me at chess. So I feel like Penn State had a system in play that got them to the playoffs. I feel like Penn State had a system in play that got them a beatdown of SMU and a beatdown of Boise State. And let's not point out, and I do think it is fair to bring up in this conversation, that, and we've talked about this, Penn State arguably had the easiest path to the semifinal of any team in the bracket. Was there anybody who had an easier path to the semifinal than Penn State? I would say no. With respect to SMU, who I do think deserved to be there. With respect to Boise State, who I do think deserved to be there. I also think that in the grand scheme of things, depending on where you put Clemson going into this, and I would say I got to put Clemson at least ahead of SMU. They beat them head-to-head. I would say at the very best, you had out of 12 teams 10 and 12, maybe 11 and 12. Would Clemson have beat Boise State? I'm going to tell you this. The answer to me is I don't think so. Respectfully to Clemson, you gave up to how many yards did they give up to Texas rushing? 292. You think Ashton Janti is not going to slice that defense up? 292, and Texas rushed for, what was it, 53 yards the next week? Yeah, I think Ashton Janti would have sliced up. So let's say, in the bracket, teams 10 and 12. That's about as easy it could have gotten for Penn State. But they went up against two playoff teams. They got aggressive. They attacked. They said, we're taking your playmakers away. And then in the second half, in the third quarter of last night, I feel like they pulled off of that. And so when they pulled off of that and they said, you know what, we are going to back off Riley Leonard. We believe that we can just play regular base defense and beat you. And it turns out you couldn't. And so what ended up happening was because they did that, Notre Dame puts up a touchdown in the third. Now it's a tied football game. Because they did that, Notre Dame scores early in the fourth. Now it's a 17-10 football game. The whole momentum changed when the philosophy of Penn State's defense changed. And what happens in this spot is we are all going to dial in on the Aller interception. It's a bad pick. It's a freshman-level mental mistake. I'm not taking that off the board. I am not saying that we should not pin this on Drew Aller. That's a mistake. That's a bad mistake he can't make in that spot. But I would also say in that spot, because Penn State changed their defense, Notre Dame ran up 14 points to take the lead. If Notre Dame doesn't run up 14 points to take the lead and Drew Aller gets the ball back in that spot, what's Penn State doing? Run the damn football. And if Penn State's in a position at that point to just turn around, stick it into the gut of Nick Singleton, and say, go get me 8 yards. Go get us a first down. We win the game. Now we're not talking about a Drew Aller pick because Drew Aller's not throwing the ball. So, yes, it was a bad mistake from Drew Aller. But to me, the mistake was set up by Penn State's defense getting cautious, getting conservative, not attacking, and allowing Notre Dame to rack up 14 points to create a world in which Drew Aller's got to do something with the football late in the fourth quarter instead of Penn State having a 7-point lead because they stayed aggressive. They did what got them there. As the old expression goes, dance with the girl that brought you. Penn State started dancing with a different girl and it bit them in the ass squarely. And it created a situation in which Drew Aller had the football at a tie game with a minute left. Instead of having the football up 7 with a minute left and just needing to bleed the clock off. Then he doesn't have to throw, then there's no pick, then Penn State wins. Texter said 50 minutes of what Penn State didn't do. How about what Notre Dame did, what it took to win? How about Notre Dame highlights instead of the PSU lowlights? Give me a superlative about Notre Dame. What did Notre Dame do excellently last night?
They stuck it out. They made halftime adjustments and were able to come out and they scored before the half. They got the ball back, and in the second half were able to drive down the field and score and tie the game.
I agree.
So they were able to do everything they needed to do to win the game.
But again, for the record, Texter.
And in the end, caught an interception that helped them get their kicker in position to win the game.
I agree. It's a gut check performance. They found the mistake. They took advantage. Here's what I will say. 0 touchdowns in the first half. Penn State's defensive philosophy shifts. You scored all your points in the second. Respectfully to Notre Dame, which is a good team. I like Marcus Freeman. It's a national championship caliber team. I don't think they're beating Ohio State. I don't think Texas is beating Ohio State. We'll come to that in the second half. I think you took advantage of what Penn State failed to do. I don't think Notre Dame took this game from Penn State. I think Penn State gave this game to Notre Dame. We'll talk more about that in the next hour of the show after Lonzo seduces you seductively with this sports flash.
It's a little redundant. I mean, that's double seduction. You got to pay extra for that, I hear. Monday's wild card playoff matchup between the Minnesota Vikings and LA Rams will take place in Glendale, Arizona, out of concern for public safety due to raging wildfires. While no players or coaches have been directly impacted, journalists said smoke was visible from the Rams practice facility at practice yesterday, which because you have practice at the practice facility, which is why you see from practice. Anyway, first college football national championship contender has been decided as the Notre Dame Fighting Irish beat Penn State in the championship semifinal 27-24. Penn State held a 10-3 halftime lead, but Drew Aller interception inside of the final minute allowed Notre Dame a field goal and the win. All right, tune in Monday at 6:30 as firming game against Wofford has been moved to Monday at 6:30 due to possibilities of weather. You can hear that right here on The Fan Upstate.